following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I'm Brett Boone. Today, I am joined by a friend of the show, former teammate, and a Hall of Famer, ladies and gentlemen, John Smoltz. Smoltzy, thanks for coming back on the Boone Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Smoltzy, I talked to you at alumni. I was having trouble putting. I did two things. I went with the old school Scotty Cameron putter. I mean, really old school.
Yeah.
And I put my left arm against my body and rotated, and I'm running it better. I'm running it truer. What else you got for me?
No, whatever works, whatever takes out, you know, the certain components of those short putts that, you know, what people don't understand, you play a lot of golf and you get a lot of gimmies until you have to putt them all in. And then you realize maybe I should have been working on the short putts a little bit harder. So that's definitely the nuance of golf. So maybe this is going to click for you.
All right. Week to go. In your opinion, who's set up best, Major League Baseball?
Well, the Yankees are playing much better. They look like they're working out a lot of their issues, really the last third of the season. And I would honestly say the most dangerous team to play right now is the Cleveland Guardians. I would not want to be in a short series with them, even if I was favored, because you got to play a short game. You got to be having the lead after six innings. So Cleveland's done an incredible job. They're dangerous. They don't give anything away. You got to earn it. And it's really, I don't know, I've been doing this a long time now. This might be the first year that I could honestly say any team could run the table. That's never been the case in the years past. It would take kind of heroic ability to win in certain years when teams were really stacked against some of the better teams. And I'm telling you, I love the intriguing playoff format. I think it's going to be interesting this year, and I think that anybody can get to the World Series.
No, I agree with you because, you know, years past, and, you know, I've been doing this for 3 or 4 years now, and you watch the season, you watch the teams unfold, and you're right. I mean, I was at dinner last night, and they're asking me who's going to win the World Series. I said, well, I can give you my picks, but I really wouldn't be surprised if one of six teams got there. I really wouldn't be. Whereas even in our day, 15, 20 years ago, you had, you know, guys kind of separated themselves. Teams separated themselves throughout the year. And it was pretty clear cut. If one of those teams lost, you were kind of shocked, like, wow, can't believe they were beat. You're right, though. Today's game with the new format, and we'll get into it a little bit later, it used to be the playoffs, and now it's almost like a March Madness tournament.
It is. Many of the reasons for this is certainly because of the injuries a lot of teams have. Now, if some of these teams and their roster composition in the beginning of the year would be intact, I'd have a different opinion. I thought the best roster to start the year in the National League, top to bottom, was Philadelphia. And I thought the best roster from top to bottom in the American League was Baltimore. Now, Baltimore has just been decimated with injuries, and it's hard to fathom that was the team that left spring training. The Dodgers have been decimated with injuries. Hard to believe that team is a certain shell of itself. Everybody else has kind of figured it out. You know, Houston's gotten kind of healthy, but I just think health is such a big issue in our game that when teams get to September and October, it's really going to be what team's the healthiest moving forward that has a real good shot.
All right, you've been in this position many times as a player. For the teams that you know are in, that last week of the season, anything you're doing different getting ready for that postseason?
Yeah, I used to love being in the position as a starter because now I can just kind of send out some mixed signals to the advanced scouting team that's looking at you in the last 2 weeks of the year. I like to work on the things and kind of play mind games in that last game and or two, especially if I'm facing one of those potential teams in the postseason, right? And I think the biggest thing that I can't speak so much for hitters, but for pitchers, we're pretty routine oriented. And you're just treating that last start as a warm-up. You want to pitch great, don't get me wrong, but the intensity of that game has been lost because you've already locked it up. So now you're just working on some things you want to get sharp for the postseason. And that really was the most fun week for me because it was one of those few games where you're like, hey, whatever happens, happens, but I'm going to try some stuff and maybe get some info in the hands of some advanced scout that makes them scratch their head.
Interesting. And you had that luxury because of the amount of times those Braves teams were going to that postseason. Got a question for you about starting rotation. And once we get to these short series in the postseason, out of the five men, you're pretty much going to use three of them for the first two rounds anyway. So those other two starters, especially the rotations that are deeper than others, does that mix up a bullpen when, let's say, a fourth and a fifth starter who've been, you know, once every fifth day all year, all of a sudden it comes postseason time, they might be asked to go into the bullpen. Does that shake up a bullpen or is that something that acclimates itself?
No, it actually, everyone understands it strengthens the bullpen and everything's condensed. You might have a guy who's 16-0 as a starter and he's going game one. In the postseason, everything's condensed. He's not going to be allowed to go the normal distance. Every manager's got a shorter leash. They're using more assets. But here's the thing about that fourth and fifth starter. It's a tough position to be in because you could go, give or take, 8 or 9, 10 days without pitching. And I think with the teams that go into the short series, that fourth and fifth starter will be more readily available, especially the fourth starter if they advance because they got to use them right away in the next series. It's the teams that are resting that have had the best record that probably have the scenario you're painting that is going to be more drastic because they will have been sitting for 5 or 6 days. Then they play that best of five and may or may not get to a fourth starter. And I think that's where you run the danger. That happened to me in 1993. Wasn't happy with the decision. They took me out of the rotation basically in the playoffs. I was 5-0. We were facing the Phillies, and I was slotted to pitch fourth. And the reality was they wanted me in the pen the first two games to help out and then start game four. Well, I went 14 days between the end of the season, about 13 days without pitching. So I was rusty. I ended up losing that game 2-1 against the Phillies. Going eight innings and only giving up zero earned runs. But I never pitched out of the pen and I never pitched again. We lost that series. So it can be very frustrating for a pitcher who's very routine oriented and goes a long time at the end of the year without pitching.
And to come on top of that with the you talk about a long time off. Would you rather, and I got asked this question, playoffs, would you rather be in, because we're seeing it a lot in modern day, that team that is fighting and clawing in September and gets in at the last minute seem to have a momentum. And, you know, I talked to Timmy Salmon with those Angels teams, and he said, Booney, the year we won the World Series, we were in playoff mode the whole month of September, and I think that really gave us an edge going into the postseason. Would you rather be that team that locks it up early, like you said, so that last week you can do some experimenting? Or would you rather be that team that gets in late with that momentum that you've been kind of in playoff mode before the playoffs actually start?
Well, in theory, you would want to be the team that rests. You have to win less games. But in reality, it hasn't worked out well for those teams. So, you know, it's a mixed bag right now. We need a few more years to kind of quantitative that answer because of what teams have been trying to do with the rest. I'd say if you're a banged up team and you got a chance to get the two best records, you want that rest. You set your rotation. And I think the one thing that makes sense, we're not set up for 5 days off at any point other than the All-Star break. And that's really less than 5 days for a lot of guys who play. So I think teams are going to have to find a way, because 162 games should matter. Getting that rest should matter. You should have an advantage. But what I'm finding the advantage is not is the hitters that don't see that velocity for five straight days. And then they see it in a flash, right? And I think that's where we're seeing offenses struggle. I don't think the pitching struggles. I think the offense struggles being off. It's hard to simulate. It's hard to play those games. And you know, as a hitter, the adrenaline, the attention to detail and BP, all those things are nice. But when you're playing every day with an occasional off day, you can stay in rhythm as a hitter more so than what we're seeing right now with the best record. But I can tell you, this might be an isolated case, because the Dodgers desperately need that time off, right? The Phillies would love to have that time off. They have a veteran team. They've won, ironically, not winning the division and doing exactly what you said. So this is going to be an interesting year. I hope we figure it out, because I love rewarding the best teams. I think there should be a distinct advantage of the best team having a leg up on the team that has to use resources to come into you. And here's what I would do. If this continues in the wrong direction, the next thing you could do is give that team with the two best records all home games, something like that. But I hope it works itself out, because it's supposed to be a reward if you've won the most games in your league.
I agree with you. And as much as I love this current format, I think it's great for the game. I think it puts more eyeballs. I think it keeps more cities in the race a lot longer, when normally in past years they'd be talking football. Now all of a sudden they're talking baseball because of the new format and 12 teams making it to the postseason. I love the excitement of the postseason. As a fan now, as an ex-player, I really enjoy the postseason. But to your point, as a player, that 162 games doesn't mean as much as it used to be, man. And when you would win a division title, get to the postseason, it was like, wow, what a grind. And we earned this. There was something to it. And you know, like we were talking about earlier, usually those best teams were rewarded. And the next thing you know, those best teams found themselves in the World Series. You go back a decade before our time. You know, you go into the 70s and 80s, and man, there were two teams from each league. So usually the best teams got to the World Series, best team won. Now, necessarily, I don't know if that's the case. That 162 doesn't quite mean. I mean, you saw teams a year ago getting in with a 500 record, and Arizona and Texas going to the World Series, Texas winning it. Nobody could have predicted that. But I agree with you. What is the way you talk about home games? Could that be an option? It could be an option, but I think as time goes on and they get a little bit more of a footprint on what this current system looks like, before they start making, tweaks to it.
Yeah, I would agree. There's a format that I really like, but it can only happen if we get two more teams, which are coming soon. Then you've got 32 teams, and then you can go first half, second half. What I love about a first half, second half is it keeps more cities involved. July has value when it doesn't really have much value. And then if you win both halves, you get a bye. There's so many things you can do. It's the minor league format that I think is great. It'd be great for competitive balance. It'd be great for building a team. You know what else would be great for? It'd be great for not dumping your team at the halfway mark because you're out of it. It's a clean record the second half. You get a fresh chance. Let's say you've been injured up, banged up, and you had things out of your control, and you can get healthy in the second half. You've now convinced your fan base that we're going to be in it. And there'll be way more teams in a playoff race over an 81-game schedule than 162. And that's what I'd love to see. And I think the only chance that happens is that we've got to get two more teams to balance it out.
Smoltz, if we get to two more teams, do you think they're going to go back to a 8-8 East and West division, because then there'd be 32 instead of having the Central? Do you think that's an option if they bring the team two more teams back?
Absolutely. It'd be four divisions. It would be equally matched, and I think you would have a scenario that plays out just as much competitive balance that you would see teams in quadrants and parts of the country that have a way better chance to be successful based on travel. And I think there's a lot of things you can make the game better based on the way it is. but you got to get those two teams in first. You can realign. We can put teams in better places so that their travel isn't so chaotic.
But I want to get to aces of staffs. Now, with your Braves teams, you had three aces every year. I played against them a lot. I got to play with you one. How important do you think it is for the ace of a team? And it's going to get me to another question that I want to ask you. How important is the ace of each staff? Garrett Cole for the Yankees. A Wheeler for the Philadelphia Phillies, that type of thing. Now, Yamamoto, if he's healthy enough, being a guy for the Dodgers. How important is that ace in the postseason to set that tone? Game one.
It's huge. I always felt like game one's the most important game to set the tone. Luckily, I never lost a game one. I feel like passing the baton on to your teammate, making it easier for him. I think a game one starter is your horse and the guy that basically is going to be pitching twice in a series if need be. And I think he's a guy you can count on for seven innings. I know it's changed today, and I know five is the new norm, but if you keep getting five innings starting outings in the postseason, good luck making a deep run. The reason the Phillies are going to be so good is their bullpen's fresh because their starters pitch so much. And if you've been there, done that, you know what comes with a postseason game. And you know what you have to do to navigate that lineup and the attention to detail. So I think it's huge. I think especially in a best of five, you know, best of seven, you could afford to lose game one. There's more history losing game one and winning series than there is in a best of five. And then there is in a best of three. You think about a best of three in the first round, good luck. You know, you lose game one. I know teams can come back and win two games, but I like my chances if my horse goes out there and sets the tone and we win game one.
And why I brought that up, and I brought Cole up. I was watching about a week ago now. I talked to my brother a little bit about it. I don't like to put him on the spot when it comes to that, but I saw him in the fourth inning intentionally walk Rafael Devers, who, you know, Devers owned him. I get that. We all have our guys that we particularly do good at. You know, I had pitchers I loved facing that I owned. I had pitchers I hated facing that owned me. That's just a part of the game. That's how your eye sets up. Some guys, you don't see their breakable. Some guys, it looks like a beach ball. But in the fourth inning, I saw him put him on, and it was like he did it himself. There was nobody on. There was nobody out. And I'm watching it going, I've never seen anything like that before. And I'm sitting there as a second baseman thinking, if my ace of the staff does that right there, I was kind of floored. Like, what are we doing? I think later in the game, Rafael Devers comes up and gets a big hit with the bases loaded. As a hitter, if you were ever to do that to me, not even look at the dugout, not a manager's decision, but a decision of a guy that I particularly hit well, man, I would go from feeling pretty good to, wow, you're not only scared of me, you're scared to death of me. When you saw that, have you ever seen anything like that before pitching?
No, I've never seen anything like it. I think I could see the mind games that come with it, you know, and it ultimately didn't work. It backfired big time. He gave up a bunch of runs that inning. I can see that with a man on second, but at no point, you know, I know the strategy was talked about that he had the freedom to do that at any point during the game. At no point would I have thought, with nobody on, that would be a good move. Because even if he's owned me and he hits another solo home run, so be it. You know, the one thing when a guy owns you, you don't want him to do severe damage or you don't want him to win the game. And the fourth inning is not a game changer. So I was a little surprised by it. And, you know, I think if it had worked out, it would have served maybe, I don't know what the purpose it would have served, but it would at least given Garrett Cole some freedom to think about maybe it works in reverse. Maybe it gets the hitter so overconfident but I didn't understand it then. I'm still trying to process it now. And I think in hindsight, he would have done it differently.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if I'm playing behind you and Smoltz gives the four to somebody that I know has got your number, I'm still going to kind of look at you like, Johnny, you that scared right now? It's the fourth inning.
Yeah.
To your point, the eighth inning, base open, completely. You play the strategy. You play the way you play. But in the fourth inning, I'm going, oh, what are we giving up in the fourth? It's a one-run game. And kind of for the Yankees being in the position they're in, and really not a necessarily a do-or-die win game.
Yeah, that definitely sends the wrong message a little bit. And again, you think about the process afterwards and you rethink it and you go, probably not a smart move. We do a lot of things in the moment that we think is smart and calculated. Right. And that's the problem I have a little bit with the game being too calculated analytically and not enough feel for the game. And here we had a situation where there might have been feel along with statistics, because it certainly he had his number. I think he would have, in hindsight, he's not going to admit it, but I think you go back and you go, okay, it wasn't the right move.
I put out a segment the other day, and I've been watching the game a lot, and I don't get into it. The catching thing, you know, the one knee has been an issue for a lot of years. People go, oh, you got to get off one knee. I understand why they go to the one knee. They teach catching different now. It's for the framing of the pitch. And there's so much going on with, is there going to be an automated strike zone? For years and years, I've resisted it. I'm a purist. I love the human element to the game. I love that umpire that sets the tone, shows me his zone. As a hitter, that's all we want to know. What's your zone tonight? Usually the great ones, they establish that early. As a pitcher, you know if you're getting that pitch down and away, you're probably not going to get that pitch in off the plate. But as hitters, as pitchers, we both know the rules and we go about our game. I love the human element. I think that's what Major League Baseball is predicated on. But we're getting to a point now, and I don't know if you see the same thing I do, but I see so many times with that guy on one knee, because he's framing, he's got to get that pitch. That ball's going to the backstop a lot.
Yeah.
And it's going to the backstop with a runner on third when that can't possibly happen. And I never thought I'd get to the point where I'd say it, but you know, couple that with the box and the scrutiny that's on these umpires today with, oh, if it hits that white box, oh, we have to talk about it forever as that was a strike and that was a bad call and this is a good call. I'm getting to the point where, you know what, we might as well, the game's progressing, sports in general is progressing. New rules out there with the pitch clock. I thought I'd hate it. I ended up loving it. Is it time for that automated strike zone? Because I think we're getting to a point where, I don't know, the scrutiny's too much. And now as a hitter, I know exactly what the strike zone is. It's going to be universal. I don't know if they have the perfect technology to do it perfectly yet. And as a pitcher, you pretty much know it doesn't matter who's behind the plate as an umpire. He's not a pitcher's umpire. He's not a hitter's umpire. It's that computer zone. Do you think we're going there? And your thoughts on it?
All right, couple things. A, I hope not. Hitting will be impossible if we go there. If we go there, the caveat would be they got to lower the strike zone. If they lower the strike zone, I'll give it a worthy, I'll wait and see, right? Because I know as a pitcher, selfishly, I'd want it. I don't think anybody in the game today with velocity and spin would be able to hit with pitchers that are doing what they're doing right now and hitting the top of the strike zone, throwing the breaking ball top to bottom and spinning it like crazy. That being said, if they lower the strike zone, they give hitters a fair chance to hit velocity down. You can hit velocity down, you can't hit velocity up. And velocity is way ahead of hitting. What I would prefer is go to the challenge system for hitters. Because if you box strike one, you had a hitter's chance. But if you box strike three, you have no chance. It's been taken from you. And I think they've done that in the minor leagues. It's fairly quick. They get it pretty quickly. And I would love to see that before we go to the ultimate strike zone. I agree, though, the umpires lately, it's more difficult to call strikes and balls today with the game and the velocity, but I have seen some really bad strike zones. So it does bring up the conversation. As far as the knee and the catcher, that would drive me crazy. I don't understand why we're valuing stealing a strike more than we're valuing stopping a run. And I just don't see the value of stealing a strike better than stopping the run at third base or advancing the runner from first to second. I would say that advancing a runner is a greater danger to preventing runs than stealing a strike. But that's what we're doing. That's the new age thing. Hitters are getting more interference calls than ever before because they're trying to steal strikes. We've lost the feel for the game, and we are chasing the results of information. And a little bit too much, in my opinion. And that's where we start getting trends that don't make sense. The wild pitches are going at an all-time high. And the one thing I've never understood, a strikeout has never scored a run, but the strikeout's not a bad thing analytically. And the fact is, we play in a run prevention game. I get it. But I would never want to give free runs, free bases, just because the catchers are not in position to block the ball in the best way by putting him on one knee.
It's unbelievable to me. And I understand if there's nobody on, nobody out, you want to get into that perfect position to frame a pitch. I get that. But when the runners get out there and it gets to crunch time and it's late and it's close, as a hitter, if I'm looking at the catcher and he's on one knee, I mean, did I just eliminate Smoltzy? If you got that split that you need to get me to chase, did I just eliminate that? Because as a pitcher, you're going, my catcher's on one knee. This thing might go to the backstop right here. Just putting that thought in your mind as a pitcher helps me as a hitter.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm not seeing many people deviate from that, though. Again, if you do not discount the mistakes players make, or you keep rewarding certain aspects of the game, then you're not going to change anything. You're not getting dinged for pass balls. You're not getting dinged for wild pitches. You're not getting dinged for hitting 210. You're not getting dinged in any of these areas. You're actually getting rewarded to do the same thing over and over again. So, I mean, I don't really blame the player, but if I'm a veteran pitcher, it does affect me. I'm not throwing that slider in the dirt that I like to throw because I know the guy's going to get his chest protector on the ball and I might get a swing and a miss. I'm definitely going to bring in more air to a hitter being able to hit with a runner on third if I don't feel like my catcher is not getting in the proper position. So, yes, I totally – for me, it would affect me, but I'm not seeing a lot of young pitchers address it that way.
Equity in the bullpen. A lot of finances are going to the bullpens these days. In past years, not so much, but now teams, everybody's trying to build that power bullpen. They have to pitch to three hitters now. How do you think that's changed the game for the good or the better or for worse? How do you think the bullpens and how we treat bullpens, how we pay relievers, how they groom relievers, where back in the day, everybody was a starter and it weeded itself out. The guys that weren't quite good enough to start at the big league level, that's what the bullpen was for. Now they're starting these guys as bullpen guys, as young men. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we're in a detraining greatness era. By detraining greatness, you eliminate the starter and you bullpen everything because we can get an arm for 35, 40 innings without exposing them, but we can't get an arm to put him in the rotation if he's not totally got his secondary pitches in order. So it's a lack of teachability. It's a really kind of, they'll say it's a byproduct of youth baseball. Because we have velocity and spin, we could throw a guy in there and use 25 different pitchers in the bullpen over the course of a season and use 12 to 14 different starters. That's about 36 to 38 pitchers you need per team to get through a season. It doesn't seem sustainable to me. We all know the injuries are going rampant like a flu through a clubhouse. And I think they've just decided that they're just going to keep doing this because the reality is they don't have time in their mind to translate the information and teach the player to be the best of his ability. You are 100% right. If you were a failed starter, you went to the pen. Now we're taking guys and branding them as relievers and then asking them 3 years later to become the starter they always were. It's backwards. It's always been backwards, but that's the plight we have in our game, and that's how they're using pitchers. And what we see is a shuffling of the deck. And we're paying a lot of money and overpaying a lot of money for starters because the supply and demand's not there. But again, that's what they've created. So if you're a young man that throws hard, you're guaranteed to get up and have important innings somewhere, and especially going to be in the bullpen. But then you don't develop your second and third and fourth pitch. You're coming in to do a special role. You're coming in to eat up innings that the starter can't eat. And you need a lot of guys to do that.
All right, let's get to the playoffs. We've got teams that have already in. They've clinched on both sides, American and National League. I'm looking at the American League. Kansas City's fallen on some tough times. Minnesota's battling. Detroit's been unbelievable down the stretch the last month. I thought Detroit had no chance. All year I've been watching that Atlanta Braves team. They started off with Acuna being down, Spencer Strider being down. But I looked at their rotation and their bullpen, and it was elite. So I thought they're still the Braves. They've still got enough firepower. As of today, they're on the outside looking in for the first time. The Atlanta Braves, I'm talking about, in a long time, Mets being in. John Smoltz's take. Let's go to American League first on the Minnesota, Kansas City, and Detroit. How does that shake out for you?
Craziest run I've ever seen. The Detroit Tigers had about a 1% chance not too long ago to make the playoffs. They have been a historic run in a development-type year. They remind me a little bit of the Baltimore Orioles 2 years ago, where the second half they started showing some signs, and then, of course, last year they weren't complete and won the division. And I just think Detroit will gain valuable information on a lot of players, and if they get in, it would be one of the greatest stories, really, we've seen in a long time. Minnesota's running out of some pitching, and they haven't been able to stay healthy enough. It's been a very streaky season, and it's starting to show itself again at the wrong time. Kansas City's offense has gone dormant at the wrong time. We've seen teams go through this, and the pressure, not necessarily the pressure getting to them, it's just the timing of it is not great. And I think right now that's the team you don't want to play, is the Detroit Tigers. You don't know what you're going to get out of their rotation. They're going to throw everybody they have, the kitchen sink, at you. I don't think it's a team built for a long run, but right now, don't tell them that.
It's amazing. I was watching them 3 weeks ago, and I said, this Detroit team is dangerous. I said, and they're in spoiler mode. It's like, you know, when your season's kind of at the end, the writing's on the wall. You got to find something to get up in the morning and go to the ballpark for. And that's, hey, maybe there's a playoff team coming in. We knock them out. And that's what I was looking at Detroit. All of a sudden, I look up. They're in the postseason if it ended today. It's going to be an interesting run down the stretch. Let's go to the National League, Mets and Atlanta. What do you see? And who's your pick to make it out of those two?
Well, the Mets are a more complete team right now than the Braves. The Braves have had to use so many pieces because of so many injuries, and they've hung in there with their pitching, like you've mentioned. Big series coming up, and they've got to be able to take those three games, at least two out of three. And it's a tough spot to be when you're two games down, but their pitching is going to be the only reason they're able to win in the next seven games, six games for the Braves and the Mets. They're going to have to find a way to win that first game and climb back into it, because you know the Mets feel like they only really have to win one, and if they win two, it's basically over. And I think that's the one thing, when you're in this situation, you can only play that game that's given to you, and that game is going to start for the Braves having to win against the Mets. So the Mets have a big advantage right now, despite the Braves being down two. They're just down a lot of weapons, and the Mets are playing incredible baseball. I think the best record in baseball since August 1st. So give them credit, too, because they did not exactly start out great in the first 2 months of the season.
Okay, last one. I'll let you out of here. I'm going to give you two teams from each league, and we've discussed how hard it is nowadays to pick who's going to be there in the end. Smoltz, I'm giving you two teams. You got two American League teams, two National League teams you think are best suited to get to that World Series.
Yeah, I think anytime, you know, not knowing the health issues, right now, I have been saying all year it was Houston that you had to go through, but they've had some cracks in the armor. I now like the New York Yankees. I think their chances and the momentum they have going in. Now, we'll see what they do with that 5-day rest. And in the National League, I still think the Philadelphia Phillies are the most balanced, but I know that, as we talked about before this podcast, you know, it depends on matchups, who the Dodgers play first, who the Phillies play first. Watch out for Milwaukee. Watch out for the Guardians. I think there's too many dangerous teams. If they get the matchup they desire in that best of five, they can knock off the favorite. And that's what's scary about the postseason. You better be on your game right away, because you're going to get knocked off by the team that's playing with less pressure. I go back to last year, what Philadelphia gained after losing in two games at home to go to the World Series, two games to win one against the fearless, crazy year of the Diamondbacks. You learn something, you value that, and you make the necessary adjustments if you get yourself in that situation again. And I think it's something that teams have to look at after each year when they don't accomplish their goal. What do they have to do differently? And I think Philadelphia benefited actually from that more than anybody else.
Yeah, and I think Arizona, you know, I look at Arizona, they're back in the mix. And I think on paper, they're a better team than they were a year ago. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see that, right? But you're right. There's a lot of teams out there, and the headlines are always going to be with the Yankees and the Phillies. I'm looking at the Padres, man. The Padres are dangerous with those deadline bullpen moves they made that really solidified their bullpen. They're starting pitching with Cease, Musgrove, and King, pretty solid. And it's a really, you know, living in San Diego, I get to see them a little more often. And they've got something special, that team on the field, that cohesiveness that I haven't necessarily seen in the past in San Diego. So they're going to be interesting, too, to watch.
Yeah, and look, they've already beaten the Dodgers once. So that's a good thing if they match up with them. So it's a good confidence builder.
Yeah, Dodgers from a pitching standpoint, I mean, I look at it on one side, Teoscar Hernandez is probably their fifth best offensive player. That says something about how good their offense. But you talk about that pitching, and there's no Kershaw, and there's no Glasnow, who is their guy at the top of that rotation. Bueller's not necessarily the Walker Bueller we're used to seeing. Yamamoto came back from that long layoff from that injury. We'll see how good he is. Stone has been hurt. So they're banged up in the pitching category. And for me, my postseason experience, my career, man, I'll take the horses on the mound over the offense when it comes to that postseason.
Absolutely.
Smolty, I appreciate coming on. For all you watching the Boone podcast, we have our own YouTube channel now. Check it out. Johnny, you'll see Johnny through the postseason and calling the World Series. For those of you listening to the Boone podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts, until next time, keep it here. Thanks, Smolty.
You got it.